Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something that, well, it might feel a little uncomfortable, but I think it's absolutely necessary. We're looking at a receipt.
A receipt.
Yeah, a very, very expensive receipt for a purchase that was made about 5 years ago. And frankly, I'm not sure the product was ever delivered.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it. I think you're talking about the promise of police reform in New York.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you rewind to June 2020, the whole world was on fire. The conversation around policing was, it was at a fever pitch.
Mm.
And here in New York, the state government responded with what sounded like a massive overhaul.
It was. It was called Executive Order 203.
And it was pitched as this total rethink, right? The big promises were to confront bias,
sure,
to significantly reduce the use of force, and, you know, rebuild trust.
All the right headlines. It really did feel like it could be a turning point.
It did. But, okay, fast forward to today, January 2026, 5 years later. We've got a new legal analysis on our desk from the Sanders firm, PC. It's titled, 5 Years After Police Reform, The Numbers Don't Lie.
And spoiler alert, the numbers, they're not just bad. They are, I mean, truly shocking.
They really are.
And before we get into the specifics, I want to be really clear about the source here. A lot of the time when we talk about police data, we're looking at, you know, third-party estimates or surveys from advocacy groups.
Right.
This is not that.
So where is this coming from then?
This is based exclusively on state-mandated data. It's from the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services, the DCJS. This is the government's own scorecard.
Wow.
And it covers the exact reform era from November 2020 all the way through December 2024.
So you can't spin this. You can't say it's biased data or some incomplete model.
Mm.
This is literally the state grading its own homework.
Exactly. And the grade is, well, it's a failing grade. So the mission of this deep dive, really, is to explore this baffling contradiction. How is it possible that after years of meetings and policy rewrites and all this media coverage, the use of force didn't just stay the same? It went up.
And it went up by a lot. But before we get to the scary numbers, I want to understand the why, the mechanism. Because, you know, when the government throws this much weight behind something, you expect something, at least a little movement. What went wrong?
So the analysis points to this fundamental design flaw right from the start. They call it the conflict between process and enforcement, or I like this term better, the busy trap.
The busy trap. I feel like I know exactly what that is just from having an office job.
Yeah.
It's when you have a lot of meetings about the work instead of actually doing the work.
You've got it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, think about that post-2020 era. It was just frantic activity, drafting plans, holding public forums.
So much activity.
So much. And to an outsider, to a voter, that looks like progress. It looks like change is happening.
Well, no, us, we're having a dialogue.
Right. But Executive Order 203 had this giant loophole. It required police departments to submit a reform plan. They had to get it approved by their local government. But, and this is the whole thing, it did not require them to meet any measurable benchmarks.
Wait, hold on. You're saying the only requirement was to just turn in a plan.
Just turn in the paperwork. It was a compliance exercise. The state didn't have the power to reject a plan for being, you know, too weak. They didn't tie funding to an actual reduction in use of force. There were no penalties if the numbers went the wrong way.
So hypothetically, a police department could write a plan that says, we investigated ourselves, we're doing great, submit it, and they technically succeeded at reform.
That is essentially the argument the Sanders firm is making. That's what happened. Departments could succeed at the paperwork while completely failing at the actual mission. And so transparency, just collecting the data, it became a substitute for accountability.
That is such a crucial distinction. We think, oh, we're measuring it, so it must be getting fixed. But, you know, measuring a fever doesn't cure the infection.
No, it just tells you how sick the patient is. And when you look at the patient here, when you look at the actual outcomes, not the process, the sickness has gotten worse.
Let's get into those hard numbers then. The report breaks down data for Nassau County, Suffolk County, and New York City. I was reading this before we started, and honestly, the trend line is hard to believe.
It is stark, yeah. Across all three of those jurisdictions, the number of people subjected to force went up significantly from 2021 to 2024.
Okay, let's start with Nassau County. What's the damage there?
So in Nassau, the number of people subjected to force jumped from 166 in 2021 to 229 in 2024.
That's a 38% increase.
38%.
In the middle of the reform era. I mean, that's not a statistical wobble.
Not at all. And when you look at the racial disparities, the whole point of the Order Black individuals were the largest single racial group subjected to force in Nassau. Over that whole period, you had 480 black subjects versus 433 white subjects.
And just to be clear, for anyone who doesn't know Long Island demographics, Nassau County is not a majority black county, not even close.
Not at all. The population is heavily white, but the force subjects are skewed black.
Okay. What about Suffolk County?
Suffolk is actually the most alarming in terms of just pure growth. They went from 166 subjects in 2021 to 266 in 2024. That is a 60% jump.
A 60% increase in police using force on people.
Yes.
In 4 years.
Yes. And again, the demographics don't line up. You had 388 black subjects compared to 473 white subjects, which is still wildly disproportionate to the population makeup.
And then the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
The NYPD, New York City. The scale's obviously different, but yeah. Is the pattern the same?
The pattern is identical. In New York City, force subjects went from 1,468 in 2021 to 2,062 in 2024. That's a 40% increase.
Wow.
And the racial breakdown is even more extreme. Out of about 7,000 total subjects in that period, 4,652 were black. Only 1,749 were white.
So if you're looking at the scorecard, the reform didn't just fail to reduce force. It actually presided over a massive reproduction of the exact patterns it was supposed to fix.
The report puts it very, very powerfully. It says, reform without enforcement is not reform. It is delay dressed as progress.
Delay dressed as progress. That's going to stick with me. But, okay, I have to play devil's advocate for a second.
Oh.
Because I know what some people are thinking. I know the argument the police unions often make.
Let's hear it.
The argument is always, look, this isn't about bias. It's about exposure. Police are in high crime areas.
Yeah.
Those areas might have more black residents. So police interact with black people more. They arrest them more. If you have more arrests, you're going to have more force. It's just, it's math.
Right. The exposure argument. It is the standard defense. It tries to paint force as this, you know, mechanical, inevitable result of how many arrests you make. We arrest more people here, so of course we have to use force more here.
So does the report deal with that?
Yeah.
Or just ignore it?
No, it tackles it head on. And this is probably the most fascinating part of the analysis, technically speaking. They actually test the exposure argument to see if it holds up.
How do you even test for that?
Well, they use this methodology comparing arrest likelihood against force likelihood. So think of it like a ratio. We know there's a disparity in who gets arrested, right? Black residents are arrested at a higher rate. That's the baseline.
Okay, so let's say a black resident is, I don't know, twice as likely to be arrested as a white resident.
Perfect. So if the exposure argument is true, if force is just a natural part of the arrest, then your likelihood of having force used against you should be about the same. That ratio should track.
That makes sense. If you're in the system twice as often, maybe you get pushed or tased twice as often.
But that is not what the data shows. In all three places, Nassau, Suffolk, and NYC, the racial disparity gets wider. It widens dramatically at the point of force.
Give me an example. What does widens look like in the data?
Let's go back to Nassau County. The arrest disparity is already high. But when you look at who actually gets subjected to force, the black to white likelihood ratio approaches 11 to 1.
11 to 1.
Yes. And that is way, way higher than the arrest disparity.
So wait a minute. You're saying, even after you control for the fact that more black people are being arrested, they're still vastly more likely to have force used on them during that arrest than a white person being arrested.
That is the aha moment in the report. It proves force is not some mechanical byproduct of arrest. Force is a discretionary escalation.
Discretionary escalation. That's a polite way of saying the officer chose to take it to the next level.
It's a choice. You can arrest someone without tackling them. You can arrest someone without drawing a weapon. If the number of arrests explain the force disparity, the ratios would be about the same. They're not. So it implies the institutional practices, the decisions made in the heat of the moment, are operating differently for different groups of people. The disparity gets worse during the encounter itself.
That just pulls the rug out from under the hole. It's just crime rates defense. It's not about who gets stopped. It's about how police react once they've stopped them.
Precisely. And that brings us to another big structural problem the report talks about. You know, we keep saying Nassau County or New York City, but the report argues that the way we lump all this data together is actually part of the problem.
You're talking about statistical camouflage.
That's the term. Yeah, it's this problem of aggregation.
Break that down for us. Why does lumping it all together matter so much?
Well, look at Long Island. Nassau and Suffolk aren't just one big police department. They have dozens of separate agencies. You have the county police, but then you have village police in Hempstead. You have Freeport, sheriff's offices, park police.
It's a patchwork, right?
It's a patchwork. But when the state reports the data, it's often all rolled up into one big countywide number.
Okay, I think I see where this is going. It's like averaging the grades of every single student in a classroom.
That is the perfect analogy. You know, imagine a classroom where most kids are getting C's and B's, but you've got three students who are just failing, getting zeros. If you average them all together, the class average, it might look okay. A little low, maybe, but not a crisis.
But you're hiding the fact that those three kids are in real trouble.
Exactly. Aggregation diffuses the blame. If the problem is just Suffolk County forces up, that's a vague, cloudy problem. No specific village chief or precinct commander is on the hook. They can all hide inside the average.
So you could have one department that's just out of control, using force constantly, but their numbers get totally washed out by all the quieter departments around them.
Yes. It shields the worst actors from any kind of targeted reform because the responsibility spreads so thin it basically disappears.
And does this logic apply to the NYPD? That is just one big department.
It still applies because the NYPD is just so massive. Treating it like a monolith hides all the variation between precincts, between different command structures. You could have one precinct with great community relations and low force numbers, while another one 3 miles away is completely off the charts. Reporting just NYPD numbers hides that.
So, okay, let's recap. We have a system that demands paperwork, but not results. We have data showing forces up by 40 to 60%. We have proof it isn't just about arrest rates. And we have a reporting system that hides the specific bad actors.
That's the landscape.
Which brings us to the really big question of responsibility. Because usually when this stuff comes out, the conversation pivots right away to bad apples. You know, oh, it's just a few rogue officers.
The Sanders Firm report takes a very, very hard line against that narrative. They say, look, when you see a pattern over 4 years across multiple jurisdictions with thousands of incidents, you are not looking at a few bad apples. You are looking at organizational design.
The system is working exactly as it's configured to work.
And this is where it gets legally dangerous for the state. This isn't just bad policy. It's potentially a constitutional failure. The concept they bring up is notice and acquiescence.
That sounds like lawyer speak. Unpack that for me.
Okay. So the state mandated the reporting. DCJS collects the data. Therefore, the state knew what was happening. They weren't guessing. They had the numbers. They saw them climb in 2021 and climb higher in 2022 and again in 2023.
So they were on notice. They can't plead ignorance.
Exactly. And by doing nothing to enforce any benchmarks, by continuing to fund these departments with no conditions, the report argues the state acquiesced to the behavior. And in legal terms, that's called deliberate indifference.
Deliberate indifference. That sounds actionable.
It is. It has huge implications under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. You know, a lot of people think that to prove a civil rights violation, you have to prove a specific cop is, you know, hate in their heart.
Right. You need to find the smoking gun email or something.
But that's not always the standard. If you can show that a state set up a system, saw it was producing racially biased outcomes year after year, and then chose to do nothing about it, that indifference is the liability. It's not about proving individual intent anymore. It's about a system that just tolerates these outcomes.
That is a heavy verdict. It's basically saying the state saw the house was on fire, held a meeting about fire safety, and then just kept taking notes while it burned to the ground.
And then filed the notes away, yeah.
So where does this leave us? The source says reform without enforcement is delay dresses progress. It really feels like we just spun our wheels for 5 years while things got physically more dangerous for people.
The data certainly points that way. We looked at a system that demanded transparency, and we got it. We have the numbers. But I think the lesson here is that transparency is only the first step.
It's necessary, but it's not sufficient.
Exactly. Without some kind of mechanism to compel change, without enforcement or penalties or real benchmarks, all this data just becomes a detailed record of failure.
A detailed record of failure. That is incredibly depressing, but it's also really clarifying. It kind of cuts through the noise.
It is clarifying. It tells us that this approach of voluntary plans and no state-level teeth, it's run its course. The experiment was run, and the numbers went up, not down.
So for everyone listening who might have thought, oh, they passed that law in 2020, it's being handled, this is the reality check. The paperwork got filed, But the behavior on the street didn't just stay the same. It got worse.
And that raises the final, I think, critical question we have to ask going forward.
Which is?
If the state has the power to compel every single police department to report every single instance of force down to the specific weapon they used, why did it explicitly choose not to compel them to meet any benchmarks for reducing it?
That is the question, isn't it? Is the system designed to solve the problem? Or is it just designed to measure it?
And based on the last 5 years of data, it seems like we've prioritized the measurement way more than the solution.
A lot to think about there. Well, that's it for this deep dive. Thanks for listening and stay curious.
So here.